My name is Mark Sherman. I'm a family doc in this beautiful community of Victoria, and I have the odd job of doing family medicine half-time and teaching meditation and mindfulness half-time as part of my job. And so today I'm going to be talking to you on understanding the mindful brain and really kind of talking about some of the aspects that Alex was just speaking to, but kind of going in a little bit more depth about what we know about mindfulness and meditation and how it affects our brain and our health. So in 1940, if you told somebody that you were gonna go for a run, they would say, "Who's chasing you?" And yet, from then till now, we've kind of accepted within our culture that exercise, good nutrition, proper sleep are healthy and keep our bodies and our minds well. And Alex just demonstrated that with some of the lessons that he was explaining to us. What we're starting to learn is that our brain, our minds, require exercise too. What we feed our minds as nutrition affects our wellness. And this is so important in this age of information technology and social media and so forth. Our brains need to be fed well. As Alex was speaking to, in the actual food nourishment that we take into our bodies, but in what our mind and our brains consume. In addition, we find that there's certain types of exercise, if you will, and this metaphor actually applies very aptly, as we'll see, for the brain and for the mind, that really helps it to function well, and like the body, prevents it from falling into disease patterns. So neuroplasticity is this capacity of the brain to form novel and to reorganize synaptic connections, particularly based on learning and experience. So it's a repeated experience can shape our brain. So we, you know, often I remember even in med school, which wasn't that long ago, that neural tissue was, a lot of the brain and the nerve tissue was considered quite fixed. And really, the research that's come out on neuroplasticity says that really the brain is very much like a series of muscles. The more we use these muscles, the greater capacity that they have. Much like if I was to do bicep curls with my arm. And we know that practice makes perfect. In the past 20 years, the area of the parietal cortex of the brain that controls fine motor movement of the thumbs has increased by about 40% in its thickness. Eighty percent of Singaporean youth are nearsighted. Right? And what's really important in understanding the brain and the mind is not that these are bad or good, or right or wrong. The brain has no value judgments. It's just what it is that the more we practice, the better we become, the more honed that capacity is, just like a bicep curl. So for musicians, we know that the area of the brain where we process music is much thicker in musicians. The longer that they've played, we can actually measure on functional MRIs the thickness of that part of the brain increasing. Jugglers. The visual cortex and motor cortex is thicker in jugglers versus people that don't juggle. Meditators. As we're going to learn in a moment, there's certain key areas of the brain that are stimulated during practices such as meditation that allow us increased capacity in our life, right? Not just when we're meditating. So what is mindfulness? Well, Jon Kabat-Zinn, who's really popularized mindfulness in the West, defines mindfulness as paying attention in a particular way, on purpose, in the present moment, and non-judgmentally. It's about noticing what's happening right now. So I'm going to have you do that. Let's just, for this moment, notice what's happening right now in your body. If there's certain sensations, tension, maybe a sense of ease, anticipation, maybe your body's tired. But just eyes open or closed, just check in with what's here. what's here in your mind? Is it busy? Is it dull? Is it alert? Is it excited? And what's here is emotion. Are we happy, joyful? Are we processing something? So much of our life we spend in the future and in the past. And mindfulness really reminds us, this ancient practice of mindfulness reminds us that this moment is when we're alive. And meditation, as we'll learn, is a practice of engendering the skill of working out this muscle. Mindfulness is kind of a thing now. Just quick show of hands, anybody who's never heard of mindfulness before. Yeah, exactly. So to the point that we're kind of calling it McMindfulness, because it's kind of a thing. There's, you know, Time Magazine, The Mindful Child. This is a wonderful book by a pediatrician in Vancouver, The Mindful Teen, is for any of us who have youth in our families or in our communities. Wonderful book. There's mindful golfing, mindful knitting, mindful walking, mindful medicine. There seems to be a book and a journal and a research literature to support all of these. And I love this cartoon, this animation, because it really speaks to two bubbles that are perfectly within our realm of experience of everybody in this room. And Alex spoke to one of these bubbles. That bubble on the left, that's our default or narrative network. We're often in this network. It's the default network. And it's a very valuable network. This is where we plan and we organize, we create, we problem solve. A very useful muscle. We have another muscle. So as you're sitting here right now, listening to me speak, listening to Alex, wondering what Aaron might speak about, you might be thinking, wow, this is interesting. I'm going to look up that article that Alex spoke to, or I'm going to eat more plants and take a little bit of meat. I'm going to be less cynical is what I'm going to be. I got to get rid of that Lada and buy a Ferrari. So you might be thinking in that way. You might be thinking or remembering what you ate for dinner, or maybe you missed dinner and you're excited to get back and eat some after this presentation. Maybe you're thinking about something that you're going to be doing tomorrow. Maybe you're partly here and partly in the past and in the future. That's okay. That's what our mind does. That's our default network. Same room, same presentation. Notice the sensation of your feet against the floor. Notice your body supported by the chair, the sensation of clothes against skin, the temperature of the air. Our direct experience muscle is not better or worse. It's just another capacity of the brain that when we exercise it, offers us wellness. Anybody know this fella? Viktor Frankl was a neurologist who survived the Holocaust of World War II and wrote a lot about the human condition. And he really wrote something that very much applies to what we call mindfulness. And he said, between stimulus and response, there's a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. And when you think about the different stimuli in our life, when we're triggered in a really positive, excited way, or when we're triggered in some way that we kind of contract into ourselves, where we experience fear or sadness or lack of worth, there's a reaction, there's an autopilot reaction, but there's a space. And as we practice mindfulness, we're able to create a bigger space that allows us to choose how we move forward, to choose how we speak, to choose how we draw a boundary, how we embrace, how we open rather than contract. You are here. This is where we live. This moment is when we heal. This moment is when we're alive for each other and for ourselves. So what is meditation? Meditation is formal mindfulness. So, you know, a lot of people have preconceptions of what meditation is or is not. You know, it's a Buddhist practice. No, it evolves in Sufism. You know, there's Christianity-centered prayer. Well, yes, there's many spiritual and religious traditions that have developed and honed and written about this skill that is we call meditation, that is thousands of years old. But when we teach people in our community, when we teach others about meditation, we say that meditation is an innate human skill. It's something that the brain has the innate capacity to do, and it allows it to function in a way that serves us. And this quote comes from a participant in one of our classes who, you know, on week 4, we run an 8-week course, they said, "Oh, I get it. Meditation's like going to the gym. If you practice cynicism, worry, anger, sadness, self-judgment, non-acceptance, we become very honed and skilled at these capacities. We develop these muscles, not because they're bad or good, just because we've practiced them. Generosity, kindness, appreciation, non-judgment. We can develop these skills too simply by practicing them." And so meditation is really a skill that we all have access to, that we can practice in order such that it unfolds and spills over into our life. So we've done lots of studies on meditation, certainly in the 70s and 80s on transcendental meditation, and certainly more recently we've done lots of research on what we call mindfulness meditation. Well, we show that the benefits of meditation include increased attention, memory, positive emotions, empathy and compassion, relaxation, immune function measured as objective measures of immunity, and we show decreased pain, inflammation, anxiety, stress, depression. There's a lot of clinical evidence for mindfulness-based stress reduction, including decreased rates of depression, decreased rates of relapse of depression at least as good as medication maintenance. In certain high-risk relapsers, people that are really prone to relapsing into their depression, lower rates of depression and relapse versus people that are just maintained on medication. Anxiety, really good research on this. Insomnia, at least as good as sleeping pills. Addictions, there's a whole realm of mindfulness-based relapse prevention. Cancer, increasing the quality of life in people living with cancer, but also changing what's called the telomere length. The telomere length is this bunch of peptides at the end of a chromosome, and shortened telomere length is associated with recurrence of breast cancer and other cancers. People who have been involved in mindfulness meditation for a long time, they preserve their telomere length after they've had cancer. So there's something happening at a genetic level. Chronic pain, prostate cancer, showing decreased doubling rate of the PSA in men with prostate cancer. HIV, preservation of CD4 counts. We've done a lot of, anybody know this guy? Claimed to be the happiest man in the world. So they did a lot of the research that's been done, Richard Davidson's lab in the United States and so forth, studied this guy who's been meditating for a lot of years. His name is Mathieu Ricard, and he comes from France, and he's a French Tibetan monk. And he, you know, they do kinds of EEGs and functional MRIs on his brain as he's meditating to kind of really figure out what's happening. And a lot of the initial research and understanding the neuroscience of meditation comes from this guy. So we say that mindfulness is something that we need to experience and embody rather than listen to. We say that mindfulness is like eating an orange. Let's pretend for a moment that you've never tried an orange. And I say, "Guys, you gotta try this orange. It's awesome. It's cold, it's juicy, It's tangy. It's sweet. You have no idea what an orange tastes like. And then when you try it, you're like, oh, yeah, this is tangy. There's this sweet. Yeah, because we embody it. We have that experience. We feel it in our body. And so what I'm going to give you is now the opportunity to practice a little bit of mindfulness, okay, to exercise those muscles. So if you're holding on to a piece of paper, I'm going to invite you to just put the paper down. If your legs are crossed, I'm just going to invite you just to uncross your legs and feel your feet against the floor. Invite kind of a straight, dignified posture in the spine. If you're comfortable doing so, you're welcome to close your eyes. It's not necessary, but close your eyes if that feels safe and comfortable for you. And just focus the attention to notice the fading sound of the bell. I'll invite you to bring 3 to 5 deep relaxation breaths into your body, and just full abdominal breaths. And after these few breaths, just allow your breath to have its own rate and rhythm. Just surrender to the wisdom of your body to breathe just as it is. And I'll invite you to gather the attention upon the area of the forehead and scalp, of your forehead and scalp. With each natural in-breath, just noticing any sensation that's present here, just inviting a curious and kind attention to this area of the forehead and scalp. And with each exhalation, just see if you can soften and lighten just a little bit any tension that might be present. With each out-breath, just softening any tension around the eyes. And in the temples. Noticing sensation around the ears. And in the jaw. Softening and lightening in the jaw. Just sometimes as you release some of the tension in the jaw, the mouth might fall open slightly, which is normal. Releasing any tension in the cheeks and around the nose, around the lips and mouth. With each breath in, just noticing sensation. Not manufacturing anything, but just noticing what's here in the body right now. With each breath out, just releasing any tension in the chin, in the throat, the front, sides, and back of the neck. softening in the shoulders as you allow the shoulders just to fall away gently from the ears. And perhaps you might notice that the mind has wandered off into planning, remembering, sleepiness. Whatever arises in this moment is an opportunity to be awake. Just noticing it without judgment. And then gathering the attention back to the body scan. As you notice any sensation in the arms, just gently scanning the arms from shoulder to fingertip. Breathing out any tension you encounter. Perhaps noticing as some of the tension leaves the hands and fingers, you might notice a tingling or sense of temperature. Gathering the attention to the chest and upper back. With each breath out, just softening and lightening in the chest and upper back. Really letting go. In the diaphragm and middle back. And in the abdomen and lower back. Breathing in awareness, breathing out and softening. In the pelvis and hips. In the thighs. The knees. The shins and calves. Ankles, feet and toes. Until the whole body is perhaps a little softer, maybe a little quieter. And each time the mind wanders off into the thought stream or noticing sound, just gently inviting it back to this moment, to this breath. Just holding this entire body in awareness with a sense of gratitude for all that it offers you. And just curiously noting this sensation of breath as it rises and falls in the body. And just resting with this until the sound of the bell. As I invite the bell three times, don't rush. Just allowing the sound just to be part of your mindfulness, your soft attention, listening to it and following it through its entirety. gently deepening the breath once again. Breathing in a sense of wakefulness and vitality. Even as you maintain your mindfulness and allow your attention to expand, to notice others in the room. Your feet against the floor, body against the chair. Just wiggling your fingers and toes. And when you're ready, opening the eyes. Thank you very much.